This is why we love racing in all its forms.
Bowyer clear kicks. Bowyer declares bonnet for Australia. They're on top of the world.
Bling it on from Colt 31. And bling it on. The comeback boys done it. Bling it on first.
It's still Rajasthan in front. And Rajasthan wins the Sandown Cup.
For the next hour, RSN is cracking the codes.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Cracking the Codes. It seems like longer than a week since I've seen my co-host because so much has happened and the weather has gone absolutely bonkers. How are you, Dan?
Good morning, Matthew. Yeah, it was a weird sort of long, weird day, wasn't it? Big in lots of ways last Sunday. I always say when it's ugly weather and it's really windy, extremely hot or pouring rain, it makes it more memorable. And I think in a way it does because you don't forget the days you get a drenching.
No, that's right. Simone, how are you?
Morning, Matt. Morning, Dan. Yeah, I'm very well, thanks. And I think you just must miss us, Matt. That's why it seems such a long time.
I don't count the days, I count the hours.
We did have a couple of public holidays for a while there, so we're getting two shows
in. Then we saw too much of each other, and then it was not enough. And Simone and I had different drenching experiences last weekend. I was up at the Healesville Picnic Races, and there's six races, and after the fourth, you only get this weather in summer. You know, the tropical storm is different than the winter storm, and it just came out of nowhere, and the mist fell down. Down around the surrounding mountains, and everyone just made the beelines for any available shelter, and you realise just how little shelter there was. The bedding ring and cramming under awnings, and then you realise that you were still getting wet even though you thought you weren't, and so on. So it was so much fun. Everyone was slopping around because it was still 30 degrees. So, but you had a sort of a more...
It wasn't as exotic.
Well, it was in a way, the way you described it earlier. What did you do last Saturday?
Oh, so we had Pony Club Camp last weekend. Like I said, things you do for your kid. So it's probably the one time of the year that I'll sleep in the horse float on a stretcher bed. So it was quite humid Saturday morning, and we're just going down to Meredith. Is it
camping if there's no tent?
Oh, I'm not doing a tent. No way. Just like to be, I don't know, have sort of four walls around me properly. But anyway, so it was quite humid in the morning. Went down there. It was great. Kids are going on a trail ride, walking along. Then sort of got a little bit of misty rain and it was fine because it was still warm. But then it really started to cool down and then the rain just didn't stop. But it wasn't pouring rain, but it was just enough that you go out and it got you wet. And so none of us had really warm clothes and blankets. We had our sleeping gear for a warmish night, but not sort of getting down around maybe 11, 12
degrees. You didn't have to sleep in
degrees.
Wet jeans, did you?
Well, I did. They weren't wet, but I had to sleep in jeans and a jumper, and I just, this is just not how camping should be.
You'd have been grumpy. I know what you're like now. That would have been a grumpy moment for you.
I probably would. How do you know I'm grumpy, what I'm like when I'm grumpy?
What was that movie that the animals got wet? Gremlins, remember?
They turned into monsters.
Yeah,
yeah.
You
maybe that's that me. Way some... But oh, look, when you with kids having fun. The kids loved it, of course. They like going out.
And Darcy can not often always be on her best behaviour.
No, but the good thing is the kids do their own thing and entertain themselves while the adults were in the shearing shed having a few beverages. So it was actually, look, it was a good experience. The kids were going in the dam. It was raining and they were happy. It's all about them having fun on their horses. So it was fine, but I'm just not a camper.
No, we did it. We did three-day events when we were at Pony Club. I remember we went all the way through the Parwin Valley on a pony riding camp from Pony Club, and we ended up in this. It looked like a western, you know, with the corrals and all that sort of stuff, and there was a shearing shed. And when I got older, I always thought, where was that place? Because it was in around the Bacchus Marsh area somewhere, and I always wondered whether I imagined it. You know, I kept describing this amazing place where we camped for 2 days, and our horses were all tied up. And then only about 3 or 4 years ago, the kids and I went for a drive along the Parwin Valley and we came across this thing and I said, this is that place.
Ah.
It hasn't changed. Well, this is the place that we camped. So it was quite magical. Speaking of riding nags, we're going to have a chat to Rob Gaylard this morning about who teed this up, you or Dan? Who are we going to broach this with?
Oh, a bit of both.
Right. Dan, I had spoken to Rob a number of months ago because I often drive past Rob's place. And every time
they're neighbours, they're just about
neighbours.
Yeah,
we're not far from each other. And every time I drive past and see Sharky or Chautauqua there in his purple rug, and I say to my daughter, oh, there's Chautauqua. And she goes, you tell me every time we go past, I know. So I had spoken to Rob a little while ago.
She's got a bit of tune, that kid, hasn't she?
She sure has.
It comes out a bit, doesn't it?
Apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
For you, though, Simone, as a lover of racing and of fine animals and horses and that. I reckon it'd be a thrill if every day I drove past a famous racehorse.
Well, I remember a time, you may have heard me tell this story before, and I'm going off, you know.
Let's just cut him off.
I was driving down to Bunbury in Perth, one of the Inter-Dominions years ago.
Is this the Northerly story?
No, well,
I did see Northerly that day. He was making a comeback, so I did all the tick-off stables, as you would do if you're in another state. Driving through Bunbury to a little place called Capel, and the sign outside this little, about a couple of hundred metres before this tiny little hotel, said, "Rogan Josh lives here," with an arrow into it. So we thought, you've got to be kidding me. So we all jumped out of the car and took photos with Rogan Josh in this little paddock. And effectively, you know, the back of Bourke, but it was in Capel in Western Australia. And then a few years later, he ends up at Living Legends. But I thought that was quite extraordinary because you don't expect it.
Well, you know, when I grew up in Bacchus Marsh, and there was Carbine and Farlap both had a direct connection to Bacchus Marsh. I used to work at Underbank Stud with Alan Tubbs, and there were all these old day yards with gold-plated or gold-looking, like copper, Gothic and all these things, and that's where Farlap used to exist. And it was this feeling, wow, Farlap used to be in these paddocks. And Lurdaderg Park Road, where my parents still live, there was originally, now it's now Market Gardens, a stud farm. And up until I was about in my mid-20s, former home of Carbine. And Carbine lived on Lurdaderg Park Road, Bacchus Marsh, at some stage of his life, whether second time around stud career. And I used to think of, with Batesy's dogs in Lara, when I used to drive up the highway and look over to the right, and I wonder if the champion of the day was, where it is. If it's its little ears poking up there. So it is interesting. They are celebrities, we just take it for granted,
don't we? But I think it's a really well-kept secret in Lara. The racing people would know, but everyone else who drives past probably doesn't even care. But I like driving past and think, oh, my goodness, there's that horse that won X amount of $1 million. And
you wonder what makes him different than the others. Why is he so good and the others look the same as him, but they're not as good?
Well, he could have gone into a Clerk of the Course part. Well, he probably didn't quite have the attitude for it. But here comes that sort of retraining part. And Robbie Gaylard's been involved with showing horses for as long as I can remember. When I started off at Channel 10 as a teenager, Rob Gaylard was doing the similar job, but also hosting on Channel 9news at the time. And even Tony Jones was back there then. So, yeah. I mean, that's quite a while ago, but he always had an interest in showing horses in particular. And this is a plan that he's really been, he and Casey Bruce have been really involved to turn him around. I think they're really proud now that they've got to the stage where they can say he's ready to be shown. Mm.
And looking forward to hearing from Rob about what it all means for the future of Chautauqua and when we'll see him. Just going back over last Saturday, Dan, Simone was talking off air about the time she remembered David Bale getting a run in a, what was the race?
He was in the Top Gun as a reserve. He was first reserve. So in your group races with Greyhound Racing, it's a seeded reserve situation, so 9 gets in before 10. In normal racing, it's a random draw between the 9 and 10. So he got a start and ended up winning as a reserve, David Bale, and he went on to be the father of Fanta Bale. Mm. So I thought it was interesting, Dan, with the Hunter Cup, it was the first emergency, I guess you call them, in the horses, that got a start and won.
And it was heavily backed as well, and it and we'll have a chat with Mick Harvey, one of the part owners, and just that roller coaster ride, because he didn't have a runner until about 8:30 that morning. And when he found out that he had a runner, he had to ring Gary Hall Jr. in Perth to say, hey, get on that flight. Now, if it was the opposite way around and the race was in Perth, coming from, he wouldn't have made it.
Yeah.
So in the end, Mick ended up picking him up from the airport, and I think it was about race 2 or 3 that they were driving out from Tullamarine to Melton. And by that stage, the horse had got into the field, obviously, drawn barrier 3. Well, there was a bit of drama on the night. Mm. Numbers 1 and 2 ended up both being late scratchings earlier on in the program. So for the horse that never had a run, got a start, ended up from barrier 1.
That drama, actually, it's worth going back over it because it was captured really well on our
digital
carnival. I was trying to think of our car. Yeah, carnival. By Mick Guerin and Gareth and all the guys out there, that just take us back through the drama that led up to the Hunter Cup this year.
Well, part of the drama, I guess, was the weather, because it was an ugly day, and you're talking about everyone trying to be undercover. In my eye line, being outside meant you would have got wet, so I couldn't see virtually a soul. They were all undercover with the poor weather. But the Elter Orlando, who came down in the same float as King of Swing, got involved in a bit of an argy-bargy with one of the other horses, and as a
like biting across the
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Anyway, he was passed unfit to run. I think the connections thought he'd be fine, and it was just a matter of giving him the tick, but it was passed unfit, so he got withdrawn. And then the New Zealander, McShard, got withdrawn because of a hoof issue as well about half an hour after. So this was earlier on in the night.
Mm.
So these scratchings were actually being heard when Mick Harvey and Gary Hall Jr. were in the car coming out to the track. They couldn't believe their luck. Here's a horse that grows a leg in front, effectively only had five horses on the front line, and he was clearly the quickest. Yeah. Ends up barrier one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll have a chat to Mick Harvey about the scenario that led to King of Swing winning. Something that I really want to concentrate on in a tribute sense this morning on Cracking the Codes is Gavin Lang, who obviously I have a connection via family and location with Bacchus Marsh and all that sort of stuff. But the bigger issue, obviously, is that Gavin Lang is the greatest living harness figure in Australasia, I would imagine, with his success and so on, and his battle with his rare form of lymphoma is ongoing. And there was a GoFundMe page started up to these rotten medical treatments that are not on the... Is it
PBS?
PBS, yeah, that are not on the PBS. $30,000 a hit, so it has to be sourced from the United States. The GoFundMe page has been rolling along and gathering a lot of money over the last week and a half. But Emmy Mazzetti, who's the president of the Caduceus Club, they set up the GoFundMe page, Dan. And Emmy's a lovely guy. I just discovered he's a painter by trade. And he's going to have a chat to us about Gavin. I mean, you've got some replays too for us?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we all speak of Gavin and about his magical skills in the sulky. And the magical part, I think, rings pretty true with one of the replays I picked out. I referred to him as David Copperfield because he produced a bit of magic in one of the drives that I've picked out, but he's done it his whole career.
Yeah, he has. Sliding up the inside, up the sprint lane and getting up on the last stride and all that sort of stuff. So looking forward to that. And Simone, a bit of greyhound action as well?
Yeah, well, the Cranbourne Cup is on tonight and we're going to take a trip back to 2013 and speak to Sandra Collins, who trained the winner, Cintiana, a greyhound that she bought as a pup, instead of taking a trip to Las Vegas. So it all worked out very well for Sandra. So looking forward to taking a trip down memory lane with her.
Gareth Hall's going to be doing our digital big coverage tonight from Cranbourne as well, so that'll be fantastic. Now, just quickly also, you're off to Old Shep tonight.
I am. Shepparton have got their Greyhound Awards tonight. I think I've lost count of how many hostings I've done. It's either 7 or 8 tonight. So I'm very much feeling the love from Shepparton. But it gets bigger and better every year. And I can't wait for tonight because we've got Dave O'Neill, the comedian, and also Greg Hall. So having a chat to Greg Hall, really, really looking forward to it. So well done to the club for securing people of that calibre, I guess you could say.
It's quite mesmerising here, Greg Hall, talk about his life story and the ups and the downs and all the things that people can relate to. And anyone who's going tonight is going to strap themselves in for a roller coaster ride, the Greg Hall story, for sure.
He's very entertaining as well, isn't he?
He is. He's an old school rascal.
Hoping that we can, you know, not have the mood too somber, have it enlightening as well. And I'm sure there will be plenty of stories that he will be able to tell.
Oh, yeah, the rascally
he
stories.
He might even upstage Dave O'Neill, who knows?
He may. All right, well, that's fantastic. And just quickly, Dan, before we have a chat to Rob Gallard, you're off to Tassie.
Yep, going there today. Hobart Cup meeting tomorrow, second meeting on their new track. So that's a big day. And we're broadcasting live there tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock through to midday. And Brendan Delaney will be there with me. So we'll be doing the correct weight part and reviewing All Stakes Day, of which it is today.
Yeah.
Group 1 Racing's back, and what a fabulous program.
You know what the big hook for today at Caulfield is? The two-year-olds.
Mm.
And two-year-olds in Sydney, wet track at Warwick Farm. But, looking forward to the babies going around. I think they're always really, really interesting. And they are across all three codes when the youngsters step out. Rob Gaylard is on the line. How are you, Rob? How are you, mate?
Lying in a hospital bed at the moment.
Yeah, you've had a bit of a rough week, haven't you, Rob? I was a bit worried when I chatted to you last night. I said to Maddie, I said, I've got to be careful here. He said he might have been doped up to the eyeballs and stuff. I hope he remembers that we're going to call him early on this Saturday morning. But look, mate, it's great to have you on. We've been dying to have you on and having a chat about Chautauqua. And you've really honed all of your horse skills. You've been a horseman all your life, particularly in the show world. And it's something that you've been wanting to get out of this horse we all love, Chautauqua, and present him to the show world. He's now officially ready.
Look, it's not far away, Dan. We had last Sunday, we had a day down on the farm whereby we brought all the owners, Rupert Lee and Peter and all the crew down, and we invited also 40 or so of the Thoroughbred Club from Geelong just for coffee and muffins, and then we had a lunch with the owners after it, and it was a really, really good day. It was well worthwhile, and from the horse's point of view, it was just a great exercise too, because we were able to surround him with people. We were able to surround him with little kids around his legs and things that we just can't practice, you know, normally. And when you're going to a show, of course, you've got to remember they've got to put up with Ferris wheels and balloons and noises and all sorts of odds and ends. And being a thoroughbred, they don't always behave in the best of the way they should. So this was just a great exercise for him.
Rob, we saw him down at the local show back, I think it was late September, wasn't it? You brought him down, and Casey brought him down and rode him around, and he was quite fractious and overwhelmed, which is completely understandable. I've been through the same situation myself. How is he about 4 or 5 months on? Have you noticed a change in him?
Look, there's a huge change, Simone, a brilliant change, to be quite truthful. He's one of those horses that, like, he came, don't get me wrong, I'm not knocking anyone here, but he came to us with a lot of issues, and I mean a lot of issues. And we've had to learn to understand the horse. And one thing I have found out about the horse, he's very much a girl's horse. He reacts with the girls around the place better than the men. I mean, he and I get on well together because we see one another all the time, and I'm the one that's got the bucket of feed. But when we unloaded him down there at the Cryo Mirrabool Pony Club, we took him off, and all of a sudden, around him were all these little Shetland ponies. He'd never seen little horses like that before, and he just absolutely took fright and reared up in the air and went flipped over backwards.
Mm.
So he made a bit of a fool of us on day one.
Oh, I think people understood, but we were just so intrigued by this beautiful horse, and he stands a lot taller than he looks, I think. I drive past and think he might be about 15'3" hands, but he's about 16'2", isn't he?
Yeah, you're spot on. In fact, that was what amazed a lot of people on the weekend. Of course, his body's now taken a different shape. You know, we've now got a little bit of top line on him. He's got a bit of a backside on him, and he's and a bit of a belly. He's not the fine thoroughbred that we saw, but his body is taking a beautiful shape about him, thanks to our friends at High Gain. So, you know, the bottom line is we have to change his shape for the show ring, and that's slowly happening. And he's just got a fantastic action, Simone. He just floats across the top of the ground, either in a trot or a canter.
Hey, Rob. What's been the unravelling process? I mean, obviously racehorses are on heavy grain, and then you've got to get that out of their system and sort of recalibrate them in some way. Just take us through a bit of that process and tell us what is involved in the next phase of his career when he goes to the shows. But what does that involve? What will he be doing?
Well, look, from the first question, Maddie, that you ask, again, we've really got to drain everything out of him that has been put in him to an extent. I mean, they've been living on oats and things like that. Well, we don't feed them oats. In fact, we probably keep all the starchy feed out of him completely. The biggest problem we had with him, he had ulcers. And nearly every thoroughbred that does come off the track has ulcers anyhow. So it's not something that's unusual.
Stomach ulcers?
Yeah. The biggest problem we did have, though, Matt, was that every time they used to girth him up, he'd turn around and want to bite them. And to me, the horse was telling me something, and it wasn't anything external. It was internal, and he was pretty handy with the left behind, with the near hind, and being able to give you a cow kick at the same time. But there was something about this horse that was, you know, he was crying out. He really was crying out for a bit of love and attention. And I did a bit of homework, and as Danny said before, I've been brought up with horses all my life, and the horse has got two guts, and his outside gut, to me, once you did that girth up, there was something wrong because it tightened on him. And we found out a little bit further down the road with a bit of an experiment, but that outside gut was full of bad bacteria. And every time you tie that up and tighten it up, no doubt the horse didn't want to gallop, you know, having that tied around his belly with a little postage stamp on the top for a saddle. And we've been treating with a product some friends have given us from Sydney, which is not on the market for regular use, but they are experimenting with it at the moment. We've been using it on him now for nearly a month or so, and we've just got a different horse. We really have. The internal workings of the horse now are working well, and therefore we've got a happy horse. It's as simple as that.
Rob, for many of the listeners who aren't familiar with the whole foregut acidosis type problems and ulcers with racehorses, it probably sounds very dramatic, but like you mentioned, it is quite common, and it's something that can be treated quite easily. And I know I went through a similar experience with my horse as well, who incidentally is born on the same day but a couple of years apart from Chautauqua. But it's not it's not something as dramatic as it does sound, although it's something that can be treated and needs to be treated. So it sounds like when you unlock that and just pull apart the puzzle a little bit, things start to fall into place. But I think you're wasting him as a show horse. I'd like to see him in the dressage ring.
Well, I'm thinking it's only about 6 weeks until the TJ Smith. It sounds like he's going all right.
Well, I'd love you to have a chat with Rupert and just find out.
Rupert would love to do it, I'm sure.
Well, we let him go after Casey worked him in the menage on Sunday, and he worked superbly, and then we just let him go in the paddock, and we didn't even unplat him. We just platted him up for people to have a quick look at to see if this is what he's going to look like on show day. And he went off and around the paddock at a million miles an hour. The first thing Rupert said, hey, mate, can we put him back into work? I said, I think we've missed the boat. but he, from being a horse that would run away from you or from turn his back on you, he now runs to the gate to greet you. He now runs up to say hello. He now runs up to say, he'll take my photo. He's a happy horse, and he's now allowed to be a horse, which I don't think he's been allowed pretty well all his life. He's been in a box, you know, and flown around the world. Now he's got his own yard. He walks in and out of his box as he likes. He gets fed three times a day. And he's just a happy, happy boy.
And Rob, first of all, to take on this commitment and challenge, what made you sort of so confident and wanting to get involved in getting Chautauqua and Casey Bruce's involvement as well with Chautauqua?
Look, I saw him go around to the barrier on that Friday night, the Friday night that caused all the problems, and there was something about him that said, look, I knew things weren't going to work out to what the owners would have liked. Realistically speaking, I mean, I was speaking to Dwayne and Tommy Berry, and Tommy's always on Facebook wanting to know how he's going, and there was just something in him that said to me, I reckon I can do something with you, and you're suffering. I don't know how you explain it, Danny, to be quite truthful, it's just something, if you're brought up in the horse world, you can pick these sorts of things. So I approached Rupert. In fact, I was after Milwaukee originally as a show hack, and ended up with Chautauqua. And then, of course, Casey, the daughter, turned around and heckled and hounded Rupert. And it took us 12 months to get him, but we got him. And on talking with Rupert on the weekend, he was in tears, actually. That's why I'd love you to
Rupert talk. In tears?
Rupert was in tears. He said, I've paid up for this horse for the last 7 or 8 years. He said, I've never had the chance to cuddle him, and here I am cuddling him for the very, very first time. So he's just seen a change in his horse, and knowing that this new life that he's going to take on is certainly going to suit him. And I think they'll get as much fun. If we can get a blue ribbon out of him, and I don't care where it is, I reckon it'll be as good as winning a Group 1 for the owners.
You've got to be careful cuddling Rupert. He'd squeeze the life out of you. Hey, this is a new beginning for Chautauqua, but the original beginning I'm about to play for you, this is him winning his maiden.
Our team moved into second, and then Satellite Miss at the 200. Chautauqua led. Artine is sticking onto his guns here about two lengths away, but not making any ground on the leader. Satellite Miss is six away third, but Chautauqua just shaking up the last 100 metres, and he opens up the margin now, and he looks pretty good there winning first up. Chautauqua by five. Artine was second, six away third, Satellite Miss.
So that was Geelong. That's where his maiden win right. was, which yep. fits in pretty well for where he's placed now in the area. Maybe that the locals can sort of adopt him more as one of their own now, Rob.
Well, if I could share a funny story with you, Dan, there's two things. On Sunday morning, we had a little grey Shetland pony, a very, very tiny grey Shetland pony, and everyone was out on the back lawns, and I said, ladies and gentlemen, the big grey you've all known, the champion of the world, please welcome Chautauqua. And, of course, they trotted out this little grey Shetland. Well, everyone's
mini me.
So anyhow, I just said, oh, we give him a wash this morning. We didn't think he shrunk that much. But then Casey brought him out, you know, and she was dressed up in all her riding gear. And you could just hear them go, wow, you know. And look, he's had about 700 hits since that day. We didn't really want him to go into social media because it's not something I'm fully in favour with. And, I mean, we had our trolls, I must admit, which hurt greatly. Look, the good things outweighed the bad things. Why we have these people within our industry that have to get on social media and can things for whatever reason, I do not know. I don't know, because it doesn't do our industry any good. We should be out there marketing and promoting it. And every little step's a great step for a retired racehorse. And, you know, we're just having a lot of fun. It's giving Casey another new life. She wants to go into the show ring again where she started before she became a jockey. And we're having an argument at the moment whether or not he's going to be a what we call a show hunter type or a or a show hack, and is bordering on between one of those two things. She's hoping that he'll make it as a hack.
And I know Casey's ambition is to make it to the Gary Owen with him. Is that a realistic...
Simone, you've been listening.
When I was speaking to her, I think you both said that's the aim, the Gary Owen.
The Gary Owen would be lovely because it's a great marketing tool. I mean, it's the biggest event in the Southern Hemisphere for women riders, but it's for horses also that have got that thoroughbred background. But at the same time, the Pope Cup is something I wouldn't dismiss either. That's not far away from the Gary Owen, because the Gary Owen is specifically for women, whereas the Pope Cup is specifically for the horses, almost on the same frame. So, look, if we can get him at that level, it will be absolutely enormous. But at the moment, the ride has been brilliant. Everything is going too well. All we've got to do is just teach him to get on and float at the moment. He's not too keen. He likes to travel backwards.
Yes, I remember that day she turned up in looking backwards in the horse float with Sharky in the back there. But hopefully, yeah, like you've noticed a lot of changes already, so I'm sure they're going to continue, Rob.
Well, and we're all looking forward to getting onto the Melbourne show and seeing his plaited mane in the arena there. So looking forward to the second phase of his career. Good on you, Rob. Look after yourself in there. Hope you get released soon from hospital.
Yes, we've got, tomorrow we've got Barrister Horse Show, so hopefully I'm out of here by then.
Terrific. Good on you, Robbie.
Thanks, boys. Good to talk. Thanks, Simone.
Thanks, Rob.
Hey, guys, it's CFO Stakes Day at Caulfield today, and Dan has got a long list of megastar winners, probably none better than
Black Caviar.
Black Caviar within a length of the leader, which is now Midas Touch, who claimed Dam's Island into the straight. Now Black Caviar, the awesome racehorse, races to the front. She's kicked away now. She's home. She's three lengths clear. Playing God is running on. Southern Speed is making ground. But the pride of Australia is the greatest show on earth. Black Caviar won it by three lengths to Southern Speed, Playing God.
This is RSN, cracking the codes.
Now Uncle Sam is third. Now Chase Auckland's about to get out. The favourites into the clear and coming now. Heading off the back straight in 27.6. The leader, King of Swing, goes for home. Chase Auckland gets out. So does Our Uncle Sam. King of Swing kick for home in front. Our Uncle Sam and Chase Auckland are coming. King of Swing grabbed by Our Uncle Sam. King of Swing kicks though. Our Uncle Sam trying to lift again. King of Swing has kicked on to beat Our Uncle Sam. Third, Chase Auckland didn't quite finish it off. From Code Bailey, then close up.
Very, very good race call, Dan. You summed up the drama of the last few strides there. It was sort of game on, wasn't it?
It was. Actually, I thought Our Uncle Sam, when he peeled off his back, he had a good chance to run him down. But the thing is, with King of Swing, a horse that we've not seen before in Melbourne, he raced the majority of his career in WA and only just joined the Craig Cross, Luke McCarthy stable, had a couple of runs at Menangle and then came down to Melbourne. But he doesn't like being passed, and he is much better when he's in front.
I always wonder where the owners are watching. When they've had a big win, where did you watch it from? Were you on the right angle? What was your reaction? Yeah. Well, we're going to ask the bloke right now. His name is Mick Harvey. How are you, Mick?
Oh, I'm really good, thanks, yeah.
So where'd you watch it from?
I was right near the winning post on the grass on track with one of the other co-owners, Glenn Moore, and we were standing there, and it was a massive thrill.
He had an amazing sort of week for you. The fields were drawn out on a Tuesday. He was first emergency, so in a sense, the day of that barrier draw, you were finding out he wasn't in the main field, which is pretty disheartening in itself. So for 3 or 4 days, you probably didn't want to talk to anybody. But by golly, didn't things change on the Saturday morning?
Exactly. Rightly or wrongly, we thought we'd be in the race. And so we nominated just for that race and not the other race on the program. And then when he was made emergency, and then it really didn't look like we were going to get in. And then things unfolded. You need luck in all sport and racing in particular. And things just unfolded from then. We heard about San Carlo, potentially might be, it was a query anyway, subject to a vet check on the Saturday morning. And so, and then things just kept developing, just kept unfolding.
And you had to, obviously Gary Hall Jr. was down to drive the horse, but an emergency to, you know, late, when the Gloucester Park meeting finished the night before, he still wasn't coming to Melbourne. So how did that eventuate the next morning? Probably lucky he was in Perth and not the other way around.
Oh, exactly. It wouldn't have been able to happen. The time difference, actually. Another green light, as I say, everything just fell into place. And he was able then to book a flight at the last minute. I think I texted him first at quarter just before 5 o'clock his time. So he got on a plane, and his dad, Senior, Gary Hall Senior, and Glenn Moore jumped on the plane too, and over they came.
Mick, when you knew that the horse wasn't drawn in the field, do you just prepare him that week as if he is?
Yeah, so Craig Cross and I spoke to Luke leading up, and they sort of said, what do you want to do? I don't know why it ended up being my decision, or not that it was all my decision, but I said, I think we just go ahead and hope. I mean, I've been on the other side of the fence where I've had horses in races, and all of a sudden, you know, I lose a shoe and put a nail through them, and they're out of the race on the morning or something like that. So, optimistically, I thought that, we decided to take him down. The good thing was Craig and Luke had other horses in, which enabled that to happen without putting them out too much, so to speak.
Hey, we'll ask you about the backstory, like how he came to be King of Swing. But what do you? I've often wondered when the trots were at Moonee Valley, and you know when you win a big race in Melbourne, you know there's a few go-to places. You know, you go to Southbank or Crown or something like that. When you win the biggest race of them all at Melton, what did you do on Saturday night?
I think Crown's still the place. That's where everyone headed. It was a bit of a hike, but that's where everybody went at the end. It was a long night. I actually had my missus's brother's 50th birthday, so I was a late arrival, and the sun was coming up when we were still going.
Makes it more memorable. Mick, you mentioned before about the green lights and everything was sort of go, go, go. When, because you picked up Gary Hall Jr. from the airport, didn't you? And you had the radio on and you were hearing all these late scratchings coming through. And at the same time, you, even if you had a police escort, you wouldn't have had a good a run getting to the track.
I know. Some days everything, you just get speed bumps, red lights, speed bumps. Well, everything that day just kept on folding. It was almost like, is this really happening? So we were driving to the track, and then Barry Purden's horse was under a cloud, and then that was scratched, and then we were driving a little bit later, and like some terrible news for Craig and Luke, Ultra Orlando, one of the other horses, had a bit of a set to him in the float, and there the next year he bumped his head and had a bit of blood, and unfortunately for them was, you know, he had to be withdrawn, and amazingly, they were both one and two barriers, and we were in three. So we've gone from not in to being in the race, and then we've got the two drawn inside us. So you're right.
And every green light from Tullamarine,
which never happens. It's easier to win from five back the fence at Melton than it is to get green lights up there. Hey, what's the story with? We know that your first winner was only a few years ago, but what was the story with King of Swing? How does it start?
Yeah, King of Swing, it was a few years ago, thanks to one of the hosts there, Gareth Hall, was a great mate of mine, and pretty much put everything in my involvement with harness racing. It was via Gareth, and Gareth started this, and when he was lived in the same area as I did up here in Sydney and Manly, and then when he went over to Perth, I was into the harness, and through the Hall camp, King of Swing become available. He'd actually just won the Group 1 Breeders' Crown as a two-year-old, and we're looking for a nice horse, and so we invested in him. And
what sort of an investment was required?
He won the Derby straight away over there with Gary Hall Senior. So
what did he cost to get into? We know greyhounds are probably the cheapest, but thoroughbreds can be very expensive. What did it cost you to get involved in King of Swing?
I think, like everything, it's a big range in everything, and I think King of Swing was the top end. He was a $400,000 purchase, so he wasn't cheap.
No,
for a harness horse, he was very expensive. But he was a young horse, and he'd done very well. So we had a lot of expectation at the time, and thought he could go on and do the job.
And Mick, of course, you dipped your toe in, or a bit more than dipped your toe into the gallops, and had a little bit of success there. You've even had a couple of greyhounds, but you have found your calling with the harness field.
That's very true. True, Dad. I was involved with the gallops for a long time, and, you know, to be fair, I was just a battler, small time. You know, you're doing your best, but it's so hard to compete in the gallops. And we had some good times, and won a lot of races. We had a horse, you know, a country cup, and mid North Coast horse of the year, and a few different things, and bred some horses. But and the greyhounds, I only had two, and they both didn't make it. But the harness has been absolutely, kicked the goal there, and it's been fantastic.
Well, good. You're a great advocate for it. We had Shane Tritton on last week, and he was telling us about some of the more worrying signs, but you're a good example of someone who has had a very prosperous time in harness racing. So good on you, Mick. Well done. And look forward to seeing the King of Swing go around next time.
Yeah. No, he'll be going to the Miracle Mile Carnival coming up in that's his next aim. So, yeah, thanks very much.
Beautiful. Wearing the black shorts for you too. So it'll be the fluorescent colours and Mick Harvey in the black shorts playing close to home.
Good on you, Mick.
Thank you.
Thanks, mate.
Bye. Bye.
Loving their racing, pacing and chasing. Matt Stewart, Dan Malicki and Simone Fisher. Cracking the codes.
Side, then Tukum Kerry, second last it's Troppo, and back on the fence is John Gilbert. They wheel around the bend now with a circuit to go, 1,000 metres left to travel. In the Sky Channel, Inter Dominion Trotters Championship Final, and True Roman, he's giving them plenty to chase. He's 3 metres in front of on the outside Tussle. She's done all the work. It's Troppo now from last to Satellite, 3 wide. On the leader's back is Fair Tally, then Simon Katz in the centre. Landora's Pride now pulls out 3 wide in front of it's Troppo. John Gilbert the inside, and one off the fence, and last is Tukum Kerry. Out of the straight, the final time of the 700. It's True Roman, 3 metres in front of on the outside Tussle. Third placing, Fair Tally. He's had a good run. Then Simon Katz on the outside. Landora's Pride out, 3 wide will be 4 wide. Simon Katz about to go in front of it. It's Troppo racing deep down the back. Fair Tally needing a run, followed by second bat Tukum Kerry. And 6 metres away, John Gilbert. 4:50 out, the runs are coming. True Roman, 2 metres in front. Tussle the outside trying hard. Out 3 wide, Landora's Pride. Fair Tally needing a run from Simon Katz, and behind them Tukum Kerry, it's Troppo, second bat and John Gilbert. True Roman though, 2:50 out, will straighten up, 4 metres in front. Fair Tally's out in the clear in plenty of time. Tussle under pressure, Landora's Pride not going well. True Roman got away at the 120 though. He's 4 metres in front. He's almost got them beat. Fair Tally is boxing on. Simon Katz is making ground the inside, but it's True Roman for the final. A great local win. True Roman by 3.5 metres. Fair Tally, I think, second. Simon Katz third.
Pixel needs luck. Vinny Chase back to the inside. Bad Billy Wider. It's 3 ways in front. Carlos Pixel trying to get through. 3 ways is the leader. Carlos Pixel's flying late. Oh, might have got up. It might have got up. I think it's David Copperfield. That was in the sulky there, not Gavin Lang. But it is really, really close. She might have arrived in time, Carla's Pixel, from 3 ways.
Well, there you go. I think David Copperfield just plucked out of your mind, David Copperfield, Dan, and it summed
it was just
up.
Just magical, up. And he's done it so often over the years.
Yeah.
And he loved it that night. The interview was actually related to David Copperfield, and he loved it because I don't think anyone had mentioned magical drives before, but not a relation to probably the most famous magician of all time. But he knew, you know, he's got that look about him, and he knows when he does something special. He just had done it in the sulky so often.
And True Roman, of course, when was that?
1988, but the Inter Dominion, but he just dominated all the races there. He was virtually unbeatable during his racing career.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we said at the start of the show, that's our audio tribute to the great Gavin Lang, who's going through a very difficult battle with his rare form of lymphoma. It's requiring a great deal of money to efforts to raise money for his medical care because of a very expensive treatment only available, not in the US, but it's a US treatment that has to be bought out here. And there is a GoFundMe page that has been run by the Caduceus Club. So well done to the Caduceus Club. Emmy Mazzetti is the president of the Caduceus Club, and he joins us now to just give us an update on Well, as of Thursday, there was, I think, about 70,000 had already been raised. So we'll have to check up a little bit later this morning what it's up to now. But it'll be roaring up towards the total that they wanted to achieve of 100,000 to help Gavin out. Emmy joins us now. How are you, Emmy?
Oh, well, Matt, good morning. Oh, yeah, good morning. How are you, Randy? Well,
yeah, good. Lovely to listen back to a couple of those calls and just reminders of the great skills of Gavin Lang.
Yes. That Carlos Pixel, that got me excited. So back to that night. So.
Well, it couldn't win, could it, Emmy? There was no hope in Hades. It virtually had to jump across them to win it. But Gavin, if there was another drive, you'd say, how on earth did he do it? But with Gavin, we've said that so many times over the years.
Very much so, yeah. Gets to just get him home from anywhere. Hopefully, still building the future again.
So yeah, that's right. So, just give us an update on the project that's been embarked upon now, and that is the GoFundMe page. And for listeners who were probably aware that Gavin had been absent from the form guides and had been undergoing some difficult times, just paraphrase, take us through what's the situation with Gavin.
Well, just a quick one. The GoFundMe page was started. We started on Hunter Cup Barry Jaw Night. We had our producers Barry Jaw and a good friend of Gavin's, Debbie Quinlan, contacted us to see if we could start this up, which we have. And one of our committee men, Terry Suhan, looks after our website. He's got it all started. And that night when I got home from MCG, it was up to about 19,000. And looking this morning, it was about 85,000.
Hey, Emmy, speak really directly into the phone, mate. Your line's a bit dodgy, mate. So just get right into it. Yeah. It just climbed and climbed, didn't it, the tally?
It has, yes. And as I say, it's up to 85,000 now, which is enormous. And I understand Gavin's had one treatment this week already. And every 2 weeks he'll be having another treatment, the final one 2 weeks after that. So probably towards the end of March, I think we'll be hopefully looking for a positive result.
And this rapid raising of money doesn't just reflect Gavin and his popularity and fame and so on, but it reflects very favourably on the nature of the harness racing community, doesn't it?
It does very much, yes. Look, a lot of my speeches that I do for the Caduceus Club, I mentioned how harness racing is such a family orientated sport, and when one of our own need support, well, that's what we do. We rally behind them and we do what we can for them.
What's the best way for people to find the GoFundMe page if they want to get involved?
The easiest way is just get on the computer and punch in Caduceus Club Victoria, and it's right there in front of you. There's a blue tag. You just touch the tag and it's all there in front of you.
Terrific.
So, it's very easy, and as I say, with 85,000 already, I know there's quite a few to come in yet. Steve Cleve's done a great job collecting items, to auction items off, which, as he did at the sale the other day. I think the helmet or the silks, one of them's up $6,000. And as I say, there's a page on at the moment where there are auction items there where you can bid on.
So. All right, fantastic. So go to the Caduceus Club, Google it, and then you'll find the blue tag, and that'll direct you to the GoFundMe page for the legend, Gavin Lang. Emmy, thanks for joining us this morning, and we'll keep tabs on the progress.
All the best. Thank you, Matt. I appreciate what you're doing. Thank you very much. Thank you.
This is RSN, cracking the codes.
And it's a big night out at Cranbourne tonight with the 2020 Cranbourne Cup. A terrific field assembled, of course. And we're going to look back on a previous winner back to 2013 when a little chaser called Cintiana won the Cranbourne Cup. At about, it was a Tem Lee. She paid $19, but that set her on her way to a couple of group wins. And joining us now is her trainer, Sandra Collins. Good morning, Sandra.
And good morning, Mr. Mike.
It must be a time of the year that you always look back and think about Cintiana and that pup that you purchased instead of going on that Las Vegas trip.
That's right. Every year we think the same thing, yeah.
Just take us through. It's like the bunny or the box, isn't it? Take us through the mindset, because it did pay your way, because Cintiana went on to win nearly $300,000. So how close did you go to pulling the wrong rein and going to Las Vegas and forfeiting the Greyhound?
It was very close not to purchase her. It's just that we went down to have a look at her, only just because it was friends of ours that bred her. And she ran up and she pulled the back of my jeans, my pants, and she sort of tugged at me. And a fortnight later, we were going past, and we called in again and did the same thing. And Paul Galea that was rearing her, he said, look, she wants you as her mama. So I said, no, we're going away. We're not sure, you know, what our spending was going to be and all that sort of thing. Can't afford another puff. And he said, no, and he rang me up for, about 10 days. Anyhow, we decided, okay, we'll buy her and we'll forego Las Vegas. Tom wasn't very happy about that.
You could have seen Michael Bublé at Caesar's Palace and you ended up with a dog that kept tugging at your jeans.
Yes, that's right.
Did Cintiana won enough prize money to fund a holiday or two later on? So did you end up going to Las Vegas or any other plush venue?
Well, no, we haven't been to Las Vegas. We had been there once before. That sort of made the decision, yes, no, we don't really need to go there. We'll be right. But she has funded a couple of good trips to Europe and the Mediterranean. So she's done very well for us, yes.
Because she went on to win the Temley as well, didn't she? And like I mentioned earlier, at $19, so a big surprise for you that night.
Oh, we were stoked that we were even invited into the field itself. So we just couldn't believe that she could be there. And having drawn box 8 in the Temley, we thought, well, you know, it was good to run around. And she just flew. It was just beautiful. I think actually that night, I grabbed you. You were doing the interviews behind the boxes, and I think I spun you around. I've never forgotten.
You pirouetted Simone.
You're going round circles.
Oh, you probably did. I remember getting lifted up by someone one night. I think that's...
She's not good on her feet. She's usually had a couple of Chardonnays by then. So
good. Don't listen to a word he's saying, Sandra. But
hey, Sandra, $4,000. Just take us through. I'm always fascinated by what you pay for a greyhound or a trotter or a galloper. $4,000 for Cintiana. Was she well bred? What does that tell us about what she brought to the table?
Yeah, she was a bombastic Shiraz dog out of Hello Sienna, which was, she's thrown very good pups, Hello Sienna. In fact, Cintiana's brother was Hello Goodbye. He made quite a few group races too. I think he went over to the West and run a mare cup over there in the Perth Cup, and he was in the Australian Cup the day that we were in the Australian Cup as well. We both made the final for that. And there was a couple of other good... she's thrown a couple of other good dogs. Consistent dogs. Yeah, good consistent dogs. So I think she had about 4 or 5 litters.
Beautiful name. What's the origin of Cintiana?
Both my grandchildren, yeah. They... one's called Jacinta and one's called Tiana. So Jacinta was getting called Cinta at that stage. She's now grown up at 9 and she needs to be called Jacinta. But at the time it was called Cinta and Tiana. So Cintiana was the name that we decided again.
And Sandra. And at the time you were working as a judge, weren't you, at Traralgon and also Warrigal, a greyhound judge, and Paul Hammond speaks very highly of you and of Cintiana, of course, as well. But you saw a lot of changes with the judging techniques also, didn't you?
Yes, that's right. I worked for about 34 years, I think, at Traralgon, and about 5 years involved with the Warrigal ones as well in that time. But we got we started running around with Cintiana just prior to having to either go judging or give up dogs. It came under the same umbrella of the stewards, so you weren't allowed to have greyhounds if you're in the judge's box or any of those positions. So we decided, no, Cintiana was doing pretty good for us, so we thought, no, I'll retire on that. We still had a few good runs under our belt with her, so we had to suspend being a judge. Which was fine.
How many dead heats did you have to deal with over the years, roughly?
Sorry, what was that?
How many dead heats did you have to deal with over the years?
we did have a Traralgon Cup there many, many years ago, and that was nearly a triple dead heat, and we did have a dead heat in the cup up there. Yeah, we've had quite a few very close calls. Since the digital cameras come into it and the, you know, very... It's very, very close. You can get more dead heats than what you could in the old days, where it was kind of a bit blurry. So if you couldn't tell, you had to give a dead heat. But I think 2001, I think they came into the judge in Geelong, and anyhow, the judging came in with the computers, and it was a lot clearer. And they didn't particularly like to let you have a dead heat. It made it more difficult paying out, but you can see it more closely than what you could ever do when you're in the other printed.
Sandra, where's Cintiana now? It would be a fair aid. Where's she now?
She's home. She's still in the kennels, actually. I've tried to bring her into the house quite a few times to let her be the house dog, but she spends a couple of hours inside and she wants to just go back. She just doesn't settle. She'll come in, sleep for a couple of hours and that's it, or sit under the aircon or whatever. And then she just wants to go back. We cannot do it. She still thinks she's a racing dog. She's nearly 9 and a half. And she still runs around every morning. We let her out of her kennel and she runs straight up into her emptying out yard. As soon as she's finished there, she'll run down into the walking machine and jumps up on that. She gets about 10 minutes on that while we're organising other dogs. And then she'll go around the back. We've got 280-metre runs and she'll go around there and she will run with one of the other dogs. She doesn't do a lot of running, but she does do a lot of cheating. She takes off like she's going to run and the dog's just the other side of the dogs will just keep going. And she just turns around and comes back, and so they have to gallop like mad to catch up with her again.
She sounds like a bit of a character, old Cintiana. Hey, Sandra, thanks very much for that. We've run out of time, sadly, but what a lovely story. It's not a lovely image of Cintiana late in life to teasing the other dogs and bolting around and pretending she's still a racer. And you'll get to Vegas one day. You might get to see Siegfried and Roy one day. You never know.
Fair enough.
Good on you. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks for letting me have the time. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hey guys, we've come to an end of another happy edition of Cracking the Codes.
It's like an hour that only goes for about 59 minutes, isn't it?
I know. Tassie tomorrow. What are we listening to tomorrow?
8 a.m. Correct Weight with Brendan Delaney and myself. Beautiful. All through the morning to midday.
Well done for the Hobart Cup. Simone, you're off to Shep.
I am.
You'll do well.
I will.
As always. Good
Thank
luck
you.
With Gregory Michael Hall, the rascal. And we'll see each other again next week. Have a good week, everyone. We'll be back next week on Cracking the Codes.